Thanks for that. So building off of a couple of really great presentations, I'm going to talk to you today about our team here, Dr. Sherry Dworkin is my advisor at UCSF, who's here with us today, Dr. Faye Wax at Cal Poly Pomona, and David Hudson, Bruce Avila, and Anthony Chin, who are also doing coding for us. And we're working on a project called The Biggest Loser, which is a critical media analysis of obesity, weight loss, and health in reality television. Should I just click, I guess? Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. I have nothing to disclose because this is a unfunded study at this point. So a little bit of background. We already talked about everyone in this room is aware of kind of the obesity epidemic, and I put it in quotes for a reason. And the panic that surrounds it, in both in the United States and across the globe. We see alarmist language around obesity in the news, scare tactics, and we definitely recognize that in public health. We saw, you know, 300-plus sessions here at APHA on obesity alone. So it's definitely in our consciousness and something that we're aware of. But there's also been a changing nature of fatness. And I love some of your political cartoons because I was going to mention Amy Farrell's book, Fat Stigma, where she traces the meaning of fat through political cartoons. She traces it kind of where fat used to be maybe more of a sign of prosperity associated with good things, and now it's moving into, you know, associated with poverty or really negative things like laziness and things that have been mentioned here already. And so we were interested in what maybe has led to some of these associations with fatness in modern times. And we, one of the underlying theoretical forces for this project was our interest in neoliberal ideas of health. So neoliberalism, more broadly, is related to the idea of free choice, you know, mainly in economics, but neoliberalism in health is related to the importance of individual choice and autonomy in health, and often to the exclusion of social factors of health, which we all, I think, are recognizing as really problematic if we're trying to deal with large-scale health issues. So we're also interested in this idea of healthism, which is a concept by Crawford, but Dr. Dworkin and Dr. Wax wrote a book called Body Panic, and in it they say that healthism is what's being sold or promoted within the health and fitness industry is not necessarily a healthy body, but a body that looks and enacts health. So what are we really talking about when we're talking about health, and who's getting to define it? And with this interest in health, we thought, well, you know, The Biggest Loser specifically was our interest area, and maybe reality TV might be a place to examine cultural signifiers of fatness, health, and fitness. For a number of reasons. One, The Biggest Loser is a hugely popular show, and it's also long-running, and it's spread to over 10 countries worldwide. So it's a huge phenomenon, as well as it addresses our interests in fatness and bodies. So and like we've been talking about today with Health at Every Size, we know that Health at Every Size advocates for a separation between weight and health, and making those two things distinct, or a weight-neutral view of health. But we're interested in what The Biggest Loser might have to say about the meanings of health. So our main research question for the project is, what cultural ideologies about fat, fitness, and health in the body are put forward in The Biggest Loser? And so how is health addressed in The Biggest Loser? What's their criteria for health? And then what is in and out of the frame? And within that, in order to answer our primary research question, we divided the content into two areas. So what is shown on The Biggest Loser? What do you see? What activities? What locations? And then what is said on The Biggest Loser about exercise, fitness, and food? And this is what is said from the contestants, from the trainers, and to each other, and all of these people that are in this situation together. So we're interested in, we're doing a couple of types of analysis, both content and textual analysis of The Biggest Loser. The content analysis is doing more traditional, like, counting of things, the number of times they perform certain exercises or say certain things. And then the textual analysis of the quotes, which is a slightly more qualitative piece, where we're coding what people say to each other and to the trainers and such. And so two authors to develop a code book, two authors independently coded 2 to 3 episodes each, and combine these notes into the first code book. And then from there, 4 episodes were selected randomly to form the final code books and with an acceptable level of accordance, which around with around 90%. And we ended up with actually 3 different code books because we found that the first middle episodes and finale episodes of the season had really different messages around health and fitness. So starting out in the first episode, you know, the messages were about sort of these people at their rock bottom, into the middle episodes, like going through their changes, and then the finale episodes where they've become these like new people, ostensibly. So we ended up with 3 code books, and we're eventually going to get 12 episodes coded across 7 seasons. So a little bit of context of the show. The contestants are put on something called The Ranch, which is in Southern California. It's a communal living situation where they are completely isolated away from their families with no job or family responsibilities, and in fact they're often cut off completely from family contact as part of the show. And they have access to top-notch exercise facilities, trainers, free food, and chefs. So they're completely taken out of their natural home environment and put into this artificial location. And then the activities that are shown, they're mainly shown working out. That's a big focus of the show. There's also other physical and mental challenges, eliminations and game strategy, because it is a reality television show that's basically a game show. And they're sometimes shown eating, though we're going to talk a little bit later about how they're actually not shown eating very often, and that food is often left out of the discussion. So some early themes that I want to talk about is this Horatio Alger idea of the American dream, and if you just work hard enough, you too can achieve anything. It's this pull yourself up by your bootstraps, do it all, and you can do it too. And that's the message often to the audience of The Biggest Loser, is that, look, these people have lost this weight, you can do it too. Just a quote I want to share with you. Rudy, from one season, he broke a couple of records. He lost 100 pounds in the first 7 weeks of being on the show. Right? Collective gasp, correct. That's the correct response. And then by the end of the show, he had lost 234 pounds, which was over 50% of his body weight in less than 6 months. So a really extreme amount of weight loss. And he said in his season finale, "I hope I did enough. I'm feeling like the hard work is paying off. It may not come off 10 pounds at a time or 50 pounds at a time, but it comes off." So, you know, he's saying like, oh, well, it may only come off 10 pounds at a time, right? But, you know, some of the things we know about the major messages around obesity is that maybe 1 to 2 pounds a week is a healthy amount of weight loss. And these contestants, we found through some statistics, are losing between 6 and 12 pounds a week, which actually, you know, we felt really presents an unhealthy and really unrealistic expectation of weight loss. And, you know, part of the reason that they can achieve this is because of that isolation of lack of family, lack of job responsibilities. Their only job is to work out 5, 6, 7 hours a day. So the second theme I want to share with you is actually something that you touched on amazingly well in your first, is these sin and redemption narratives around weight and weight loss. And this idea that fatness is a sin and that weight loss is redemption. Or in the case of The Biggest Loser, exercises are the redemption. They go through a series of activities that are the redemption for this sin of weight that they have. And other forms of redemption for The Biggest Loser include restriction, so very openly saying, I can't have this food maybe ever again, or you often see them wearing armbands in later seasons that's counting every calorie they take in or out. So it's showing like, oh, look, I'm engaging in this active form of restriction because I have to rid myself of the sin of this flesh, basically. And one quote I wanted to share about a contestant named Brady from season 6. This was the week in particular where Brady lost 12 pounds in 1 week and was very excited about it. Everyone was flabbergasted. He said, it feels wonderful. Like, I need to spend more time in the gym to get results like that. So even with a 12-pound weight loss that week, he was still like, oh, need to go back to the gym. Like, it wasn't enough redemption, right? And then Bob, one of the trainers commenting on Brady, said he just deserved to have that weight loss because the 3 pounds last week devastated us. So 3 pounds weight loss in a week was devastating. He'd just been doing everything right, so he deserved that 12-pound weight loss. So, and the final theme I want to share with you is what is in and out of the frame. And this is of particular interest to me as a sociologist. Like I said earlier, they're completely socially isolated, and lots of things are left out of the show. Things like food insecurity, class, race, and employment, and class and economic concerns. You know, who can really afford to leave their job for maybe between 2 to 10 weeks, depending on how long they're on the show. And then once they get home, who can afford to spend 4 or 5 hours a day exercising to keep up the weight loss that they need to come back and check in at the finale. There's also little to no follow-up of previous contestants. We have reports from a few contestants, one woman in particular, who said she developed an eating disorder after being on the show. Ryan, the season 1 winner, has actually been in some publicity saying that he's gained all of his weight back that he lost, as well as him describing some of the really dangerous health practices he engaged in, including dehydration and fasting before weigh-ins to get that extreme weight loss. Other contestants reporting that they gained 15 to 20 pounds after the finale just because they were drinking water again. Right, and so these are people who have been exercising 4 and 5 hours a day, but then also not drinking enough water so they can lose the water weight before a weigh-in to win this game show. So other themes that I didn't highlight today that we're definitely looking at are themes of gender. I know we've been talking about women mainly, but it's women and men on the show are both absorbing these messages about obesity. We're also interested in race and the reasons why people of color are very often not featured in the finales of the show. They may start out at the beginning of the show, but they very rarely reach the end of the show, and we're not really sure why that is. As well as the gender theme of mothers as the decision makers of the household and mothers being in charge of the whole family's health, which we hear, I think, a lot in childhood obesity. So just to go back to our research question about what cultural ideologies about fat, fitness, and health are put forward, we find that the biggest loser definitely sees fat bodies as inherently unhealthy and in need of both surveillance and change, as well as their definition of health being entirely focused around weight loss, right? So completely opposite from the health at every size paradigm. Weight equals health, and there is very little discussion. The biggest loser of other measures of health, like cholesterol or diabetes. It's in there a little bit, but it's always related to weight. And then this idea of neoliberal health is where it's your individual job to fix the fatness, and individual responsibility takes precedence over any structural health disparities that might exist, as well as the complete lack of recognition of the high access and high privilege these people have in getting to the ranch. Limitations is that it's mainly qualitative, as well as a small amount of episodes easily available. And like I said, in the future, we're focusing on race, class, and gender, some more statistical analysis of the weight loss results, as well as content analysis of the trainer and contestant quotes. And I just want to thank my team again, especially Dr. Sherry Dworkin, and our research team who's working hard at coding right now. So, thank you.